Welcome to the podcast edition of American Warrior Radio with Ben Bueller Garcia, presented by Medicare Mentors. American Warrior Radio, telling the stories of the American men and women who protect us at home and abroad. And now, here is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia.
We all owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Welcome to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Over the course of my 3 decades supporting the members of our military, I've heard a lot of stories. I've spoken with a lot of heroes. I've learned there's different types of courage. There's courage in battle, and then there's courage after the battle. Today's guest is one of the most inspiring people that I think we'll ever have on American Warrior Radio, in my opinion, because of the courage he has shown after the battle. I've wanted to have Bobby Henline on American Warrior Radio ever since he appeared in the HBO special comedy Warriors Healing Through Humor. That documentary gave 5 severely wounded Iraq and Afghanistan veterans the opportunity to explore their experiences through the healing power of humor with the support of some ALS comedians. It's taken me 5 years to connect with Bobby, but we finally got him thanks to the wonderful folks at Bravo 748 Military and Combat Speakers Bureau. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome a veteran who completely lights up the stage. I mean, he is hot. He will completely blow you away. Welcome. Well done, comedian Bobby Henline.
Oh, I thought you were talking about somebody else for a second there. How you doing?
Well, Bobby, I was kind of taking those from your routines. Is that not is that copyrighted, Bobby? Am I in trouble?
No, yeah, I would have to copyright with your left hand. I'm having difficulties with that.
Bobby, honestly, I wanted to have you. My wife and I saw that feature on HBO years ago, and it's right after I'd started the taking over American Warrior Radio, and she says, you got to get that guy on the show, and I'm thanks to Jamie and the folks at Bravo 748, we're finally making it happen. I'm very, very pleased to have you with us.
No, thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's, a little bit about Bobby. You, son of a drunken sailor, huh?
Yes, definitely. 2 of them. My dad and my stepdad, both drunken sailors.
So is that why you decided to run away and join the Army, Bobby?
Exactly. I had to change my stars.
Well, I tell you, most folks would probably say we don't have much in common, but we do have 2 things in common. In prepping for the show, I was looking a little bit into your background. We both never became cops, even though we wanted to. But one thing really struck me, similarly to you, Bobby, my mom wouldn't let me play football in high school. She said, just stick with baseball. It's nice and safe. Finally, my junior year, she let me play JV football, played the whole season without a scratch, and then broke 3 bones in 4 weeks playing baseball that same year. I said, yeah, let's stick with something safe. So,
right. They got kids throwing an 80-mile-an-hour ball at you, and they think it's safe.
Yeah, well, tell us, what inspired you initially to join the Army, Bobby?
Initially, I was that kid going the wrong direction, and I had an uncle who kind of pointed me in the right direction and said, this is what you need to do. So I knew it. I needed someone outside my parents to tell me to straighten up. And so I listened to my uncle, and I took that and joined the Army back in 89 when I was 17 years old.
And your initial start was with the 3rd Cavalry, correct?
The first initial start was actually with the 1st Cav.
Okay.
Desert Storm. Yeah, Desert Storm, I was 19 years old with the 1st Cav out of Fort Hood. Did my 3 years of service and then got out for 10 years.
Well, now, that's what's, I tell you, you inspire me, personally, Bobby, for a lot of reasons, one of which was you had done your service to our nation. You had served. You served in combat. You went to war for us. But when 9/11 happened, you told your wife, time to go back in, and you were pretty ripe. Pretty long in the tooth by that age, huh?
Right, yeah. I was 30 years old when 9/11 happened. And I just knew I had something to, I always kind of wanted to go back in. I missed it. And I knew that I can help out the servicemen and women that are going in today, that I could still serve at this point. Something like that happened to my country, knowing that I could still make a difference, I need to go back in and do my part. I had to go back to basic training all over too. Out for 10
really?
Years. Yes.
I did not know that. I'm just a dumb civilian. After all that, you had to go back into basic training. That must have been kind of intriguing as a 30-year-old, huh?
It was a lot different mentally. You know, when you're younger, the hard part wasn't the physical part; it was the mental part of the head games they're going to play with you to see if you could handle it. At 30. The mental part was easy. It was the physical part I had more trouble with.
But you made it through.
Now, I did.
And because I don't know if this was a poke in your mom's eye because of the whole baseball football thing, but you decided to start jumping out of airplanes.
Yeah, when I actually first joined, I wanted to go airborne and jump out of planes, but she made a deal with me that, you know, she was going to sign my paperwork for me to go in the Army. So she said, if I sign it, you can't go airborne. I said, that's fine. If I can't go airborne, you got to quit smoking. So her and I made a deal, and she finally quit smoking last year. So she finally kept up to her end of the deal.
Well, good for her. God bless her. Bobby, I want to spend most of the show today talking about after that point in time. You rejoined the Army. You were in your fourth tour in Iraq. I think you'd only been back with your unit about 3 weeks at that point in time. Tell us what you can remember about April 7th, 2007.
Yeah, on April 7th, 07, we were going out on a normal convoy like we were doing every day, just getting things ready and getting ready to head out the gate, and that's the last thing I remember. And that was about 7:20, 7:30 in the morning, having a briefing, getting ready to roll out the gate for our mission for the day. I got hit. I found out later, you know, it was at 5 o'clock in the evening. The whole day was wiped out for me. The next thing I remember, I woke up 2 weeks later out of my medically induced coma in San Antonio, Texas.
Wow. What did you, looking back, do they know what kind of bomb it was, Bobby? I mean, that's pretty devastating. So you were the only member of your crew to survive, as I understand it.
Yeah. Looking back at the reports and everything, you know, just like any thing that happened here in the States, they got investigated all afterwards, and they found the wire that detonated the bomb. It was 3 to 4 artillery rounds that were buried in the center of the road. It blew up the Humvee and threw it 20 meters, flipped it upside down, and left a hole 5 foot in diameter and 3 feet deep. Killed the other guys instantly, and I was the only survivor out of 5 guys. My head was burnt to the skull. My left arm burnt from the shoulder down. My legs were burnt real bad. Somehow my torso didn't get burnt. But I ended up using all that skin, you know, to replace all the burnt skin and all the surgeries. I spent 6 months in the hospital, 3 years total recovery, and I'm now at 48 surgeries into it.
Wow. What? I know you say you can't remember much about the day. You woke up 2 weeks later. I guess I'm trying to get a sense, Bobby, because, again, the courage that you've shown and I think continue to show it, and 99.999% of us will never walk in shoes similar to yours. I'm trying to get a sense of when you, the first time that you looked in the mirror, or at which point when you were conscious and recovering, did you realize the extent of your injuries?
Yeah, like you said, I'd walk in those shoes. I think I was more blown out of the shoes. You don't want to try that.
But, do we have a rim shot? Rim shot sound effect there?
Yeah. Yeah. But seriously, the first time I went to go shave, I was in the hospital. You know, I had people shave me all the time, and then eventually I wanted to try it myself again. And for the first time, I was able to see my face. They cleaned the medicine out of my eyes so that I could see what I'm doing. And I noticed my face was distorted and stuff. My head was still bandaged. It took 18 months to finally get skin on my head. But, you know, my eyes were wide open from the skin being burnt off. The left eyelid was totally gone, pretty much, and they were trying to rebuild it. And I just thought they were going to fix me. You know, all right, I look funny now, but I'm at the shop, and they're going to fix me, and I'll be back on the battlefield again. I had my left hand still at the time, which I worked on after 2 years. But really, in the midst of being in the hospital that time, I thought I was going to get fixed. I didn't realize how bad it was until after I left the hospital.
When was the first time your family saw you, Bobby?
Shortly after my wife was there at the time, she was there waiting when I came in. She already knew I was on my way to Texas. So my wife, my sister, and my mom were the first family members there. Of course, I don't remember really seeing them that much in the ICU time. I started to remember a little better things afterwards. But my kids came and saw me probably about 3 months into it, maybe 2 months into it, when the kids saw me for the first time.
I'm curious about it because I noticed, particularly with young children, their love is very pure, but they also have this tendency to say exactly what's on their mind. They haven't quite developed that that mouth editor yet. How did that go with your kids?
They were warned ahead of time. They had pictures and stuff. They saw pictures of me ahead of time to know that I was going to look a little different. I think my son said the funniest thing. He just kind of was looking at me as I was sitting in a wheelchair. No, tilting his head on each side of me. Oh, it looks like the fire bit your ear off, Dad. It pretty much did. I know for those that can't see me, I am missing my left hand, and I barely got one part of an earlobe left on one side and totally gone on the other side.
What percentage, 40% of your body, Bobby, was burned?
Yeah, 38% body was burnt. Then they take the other skin, that's full thickness burns, and then the skin they use to replace your skin when they do a skin graft, that actually acts like a burn to your skin too later. And so the skin doesn't stretch the same. Technically it would be up to 80% now with all the scarring and stuff.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Bobby Henline could have given up. He really could have, but he didn't. And he's moved forward, and he's doing just some wonderful things with his life. When we come back, we'll spend some more time with Bobby Henline, the well-done comedian. Stick around. We're back here on American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We've got a guest today, a guest I've been trying to get on American Warrior Radio for 5 years. And thanks so much to the folks at Bravo 748 for finally putting us in touch. Bobby Henline. Bobby is an Army veteran, actually served our country, went to war in Desert Storm, and then decided to go back after 9/11, was severely injured in an IED blast. All the other members of his crew were killed. But Bobby wasn't. But Bobby, coming back, we talked a little bit about your injuries, 48 surgeries since that fateful day in 2007. I found it interesting, Bobby, you said there was no God voice initially that came to you. I sometimes like to joke, when you go into a sushi restaurant, they've got the little menu there with the pictures, and some of the dishes are called challenging. So in some ways, your relationship with God was sort of like that challenging sushi. Doesn't mean it's bad. It probably is good once you get the courage to do it. But tell us about that, sort of that progression as you're now aware and deciding to or facing having to move on with your life.
Yeah, waking up from my coma, I remember being like on a giant iceberg is the best way to describe it. At nighttime with stars out, but it wasn't cold or anything. It was very calm, very comfortable. And I heard voices telling me, I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And my family's waiting for me. And that's when I knew that I was being saved. That's when I knew there was a higher power, because I always battled with that before, if there was or not. And so knowing going forward, I knew God was there. And I knew I was here for a reason. I didn't know what. I felt useless. I didn't know how I could be any use to anybody at this point. In fact, the first year of my recovery, I prayed to God every night just to take me. I felt like a burden to my family, felt useless. I had survivor's guilt. I didn't want to be around. I didn't know it was to be a vegetable on the couch all day long. That's what I thought it was going to be. I had to learn how to walk all over again and get my independence back. I didn't know if I was going to have my vision or not. So I had a lot of worries there about feeling useless and a burden, and thought I'd be better off if I didn't make it. It'd be easier for my family to go on and not have to be paranoid of me getting an infection and dying in another surgery.
Hmm. I saw an interview with you and your wife at that time, Bobby, and it just really touched me, because I think it was your wife that said that you both, one of the big fears you faced at that point in time was that you both shared was, what if this doesn't work? And I don't know if she was talking about the marriage or the surgeries or both.
Yeah, at that time she was talking about the surgeries on my head.
Mm-hmm.
It was 18 months to finally get a skin graft to work up there. It just wasn't working, and without it closing, there's a chance for an infection every day that I can get into it. And the doctor said if I was getting an infection in my head, there's just not enough up there. There's no way to be able to stop it. Too close to my brain. Because of the damage to my head, they actually had to shave parts of my skull, which makes my head really lumpy now. So with that, the skull is a lot thinner. So I still got to be careful today, even with the head and hitting it and bumping it. I don't feel anything up there. So I mean, you could take a knife and cut my head, and it wouldn't hurt me at all.
Yikes. Well,
definitely the danger to that is bad. But yeah, she was referring to the head. We were very happy when it finally closed with that. And of course, we did end up struggling like everybody else going through times like this. It's hard on marriages in the military alone, and then going through the caregiver stuff too. It really takes a lot out of both of you.
Well, the next chapter in the Bobby Henline story, you apparently were somewhat of, in the hospital, somewhat of the war delinquent, if you will. You're upbeat, you're positive, so much so that apparently one of your nurses or therapists said, hey, you know, Bobby, maybe you should, you know, consider a career in comedy. I almost want to be in that room at that time. What was your first reaction to her suggestion?
I thought she was crazy.
Okay.
Because I used my humor for myself. I'm okay. So let my family know that I'm okay inside. You know, even though I'm struggling, I'm dealing with being the only survivor, I'm still healing. I'm still okay, and I don't want them to worry. So I make them laugh. I made people laugh and made myself laugh so I didn't have to deal with the pain. When you're going through physical and occupational therapy, 3 years of that and stretching everything out again and getting moving around hurts.
Mm-hmm.
So I would use comedy to kind of lighten the mood and laugh at the crazy situations we're in. And I just didn't think of taking it to the stage. There's no way. When she told me that, I was like, no, it's funny here because we have 6 inch of humors. Your hospital staff, we're veterans. We both have 6 inch of humors. That's how we deal with our life, right? You got to be able to laugh at some dark stuff. And so she kept nagging me. So I finally said, listen, I'll do it. If you be quiet and stop telling me to do this, I'll prove you that it's not going to work. People are not going to be able to laugh at this. So I've been trying to prove her wrong for 9 years now.
Well, you make a lot of bets with people, Bobby.
Right.
You know?
I'm a little short-handed because... Dealt a bad hand, right?
Folks, look him up. Look up Bobby Henline. Yeah, this probably doesn't work as well on radio as it does on stage or on TV, does it, Bobby? But we'll do that.
No, it's more of a visual thing.
Yeah, we're both professionals. we'll get through. So really, the HBO special, when you went up there with those other four veterans, that was not your first gig. You'd done some stand-up before that?
I've been doing it for 2 years on my own.
Okay.
The other four had never tried it before. So when I saw the opportunity, they were looking for wounded veterans who want to get into stand-up comedy. I'm like, I'm already here. Help me get further. Help me. I don't know what I'm doing. I've been doing it for about 2 years at that point when I got to do that Comedy Warriors. Matter of fact, Joe Cash now is also in that. He's the Jewish guy who lost one leg, another wounded veteran, obviously, in Comedy Warriors. Him and I are actually getting ready. We're making a tour for next year with Mark Price. Mark Price is known for Skippy on Family Ties.
Oh, okay.
So we're getting ready and trying to gear up right now and possibly do a tour next year all together with Mark and Joe.
I got to be honest. I don't think I've ever seen Family Ties, but it sounds impressive, Bobby.
He probably says,
"Yeah, Bobby, he's that guy from." I'm a big believer in the power of storytelling. So let's paint the visual picture. When Bobby Henline walks into that very first comedy club to pitch the booker or the owner, or however that works.
You got to start off at an open mic. I'm sure they were nervous. You go sign up for an open mic to practice or try it. And so that's what I did. I signed up at the Comedy Store in L.A. And I got on the list, and I got 3 minutes of jokes that you're allowed to tell. And then they give you a little light with 2 minutes. So it gives you 1 minute left. Okay, a minute to go. I only had 2 minutes of material that I happened to write and didn't know how to write exactly, but I did 2 minutes of jokes that nobody laughed at. And then I had 1 minute left still. Like, oh my God, what do I do? Luckily, in ninth grade, I wrote a rap about being constipated. So it saved me for that other 45 seconds.
I don't know where to go with that, Bobby. I just keep in mind it's a family show. So do you think they weren't laughing because you weren't funny or because I guess what I'm wondering is, I mean, the minute you if they're not expecting Bobby Henlein, nowadays people buy a ticket, they're expecting to see Bobby Henlein. But in those days when you just walked out on stage, do you think folks are just sort of didn't quite know how to handle it? Because most of your jokes, Bobby, it's self-deprecating. You're mocking yourself, right, as a way of making other people feel comfortable.
I found, you know, they actually have a hard time in the beginning. Usually partway through the set, you'll see I'll get more laughter instead of shock. But yeah, definitely initially it's shock right away. And so I had to find a way to break the ice right away. And at first I just would tell them I'm burned for life, start talking about it and not make fun of it kind of right away. But then I learned actually if I just go out there and attack it and just call them out on what they're seeing right now and their shockedness is, just tell them, hey, you should see the other guy.
Exactly. I was just about to bring that up. I love that line. I love that line. So what of your routine, I'm sure it changes over the course of time. Is there any veins of comedy or jokes that you think get the best reaction, or is it's kind of from night to night, crowd to crowd, depending on how much they've had to drink?
Yeah, exactly. It does really go from crowd to crowd. It's amazing that sometimes, you know, we do a show and you got a sold out show of 300 people and it does okay. But then like the second show is only half the amount of people and it does better. It just depends on if the audience is ready for a good time, they're ready to release themselves to the comedy and not try to hold back. And when it does, it's amazing. The energy goes back and forth between the comic and the audience, and it's really poetic and just a lot of fun.
Have you ever had anybody get up and walk out on you, or just couldn't deal with it, or for some, you know, people? I mentioned I have never been in your shoes. I hope to never be. But do you find that some people just can't accept the fact that you've chosen this route? You know, folks can be kind of judgmental.
Yeah, not really so much judgmental at me, but definitely they're uncomfortable with laughing at it. I actually had a lady in Vegas one time, right there in the front row, trying to tell strangers next to her because she felt so bad. She was, I can't laugh at this. I can't laugh at this. And so I could hear her. So I just looked down and go, really, ma'am? I went through all this. Now I got to hold your hand and let you know it's okay. And then she's like, oh, okay.
And you probably told her,
I smiled. And
I can't spare a hand. I need the one I've got for the microphone.
Right. Can you hold this up there and hold the mic for the lady?
Hey, Bobby, if you use that, I get credit, okay?
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're having a good time with Bobby Henlein, talking about a very serious subject. We come back, we'll talk more about his career as a comedian and how he's using that to help others. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. A show 5 years in the making. I've been trying to get Bobby Henlein on the show for 5 years, so I'm really fired up about his appearance here today. Too much, Bobby?
You're just waiting for the smoke to go out.
But coming back to, we were talking a little bit about initially when you're breaking into comedy and doing stand-up. So here's a fellow who's been badly burned over 40% of his body, mostly the upper half, the holding the mic and talking to the mic half. Bobby, have you seen the documentary, or it's a series called Can We Take a Joke?
No, I haven't seen that.
You really need to watch it. It's a series of comedians talking about it's sort of their take on the outrage culture nowadays and sort of the industry that's developed and the idea that, you know, we used to be able to get up on stage or just in our own lives and kind of make fun of each other and kind of good-natured ribbing. You know, as a civilian, one of the first things I learned interacting with members of the military, particularly the Special Forces folks, is if they're not giving you a hard time, they don't really like you. You know, it's when they really start to bust your chops that you know that, okay, you've made some inroads. But it's just a fascinating examination of how we've gotten so darn sensitive. And it's almost like, you know, we're all walking around with our lips zipped and we can't bring anything up anymore. And it just really made me think of you as far as what you go through on stage or as you're up there trying to, because really my sense, Bobby, is that by getting up there and telling doing the routine that you're doing, you're really telling folks, look, what I went through is not fun. It wasn't wonderful, but it's okay. Look inside. And that's the commonalities that we have.
Exactly. I mean, you got to look about what's inside. You got to be able to laugh at life and continue to march forward. And just because you almost died, well, you're alive. Don't stop now. Keep going. Keep continuing to chase your dreams. You know, if I can do this, imagine what you can do. Look at it differently. You know, that's the message you try to get out there, just to motivate people to go after what they want, to live their life to the fullest.
Bobby, in preparing for the show, I found I did, as you can tell, I kind of did my research. Well, it's been five years. I guess I probably should have, huh? but you said something that I've heard before with some of our guests, not necessarily in the vein of survivor's remorse, but really one of those aha moments for you was, look, I survived. I don't know why. I don't know what this means. But what I do know is I need to live life to the fullest for the guys that didn't make it. Is that still something you're doing, I assume?
Oh, always keeping those guys in my mind. I have my angel truck with their name tags on the ceiling that I drive everywhere in. They're tattooed on me. I have met all their families. I will continue to live for them, and they honor them, you know, for what they sacrificed and their families. I can't waste the life I've been given. You know, their family and would rather have them here if I'm going to waste it. But they all follow me. They all back me. And I just love meeting and talking to them and learning more and more about my angels when they were here.
You know, Bobby, we can add not just star of stage, but star of TV screen and silver screen, too. You appeared in the Showtime Shameless series, probably my wife's favorite series. And then you were a star, or you had a role in the movie Sophie and the Rising Sun, where you played a World War I veteran who was badly burned by mustard gas. Tell me, I'm trying to picture that very first day on the set when you walked into the special effects makeup trailer and they looked at you and said, nope, you're good.
Right, done. We're saving money. No wonder they hired this guy. They were mad because they were out of job.
Well, I guess I'm trying to get an intro gig for you. You know, I will not make jokes about bodily functions, Bobby. But what, as an example of people adjusting to seeing you, I mean, I'm guessing that the crew there knew that you'd been hired and this is the role you're playing. But did the other actors? I mean, do you still find that people are uncomfortable around you? And is that part of what you're trying to fix?
Yeah, there's definitely some people that are really uncomfortable, and that's exactly what I'm trying to fix. Is the more we talk about it, if you see me on stage, on TV, someone looks like me, and I'm talking, you see me being normal, or playing, you know, a character, it's going to open up to, wow, that's a normal person too. You know, it's okay to talk about it. The more I get interviewed, the more I can say, it's okay to ask what happened, you know. Yeah, kids that like the schools I talk to, when they see another burn survivor, someone disfigured, they won't be as shocked. They'll be more curious to the story and feel more comfortable talking to them.
We've had Jason Redman on the show, the Navy SEAL that was shot in the face, and I know it's part of his transition as he was trying to deal with the situation. He even, you know, just the looks he would get walking through the airport and the way he dealt with it, he printed up some T-shirts that said, "Stop staring, I was shot by a machine gun, it would have killed you."
Oh, wow, I love that shirt.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I brought up the movie and the makeup and stuff, but it's not makeup. Bobby Henline has to live his life every day, and wherever you go, whether it's the grocery store or on a plane or just walking through an airport, and do you, I mean, Bobby, when I go out and people are staring at first, I think it's because I'm so good looking, but that lasts about 1/10 of a second. Then I realize, well, maybe I, you know, need to go into the bathroom and wipe my nose or something's wrong.
No, but, exactly right. You've got some food on your face.
Right. But I mean, for Bobby Henlein, is it, does, I guess I'm so impressed with you and I'm so inspired by the way you're choosing to live your life. But does there ever get to be a point where Bobby's like, man, just leave me alone?
There are times definitely that I just want to go and do something and not, you know, I'm not getting recognized because of these movies. I'm getting recognized because of the way I look.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just want to go in and do something and not have someone stare at you and not ask you about it. You know, I'm normal where I'm, you know, could be in a movie like anybody else or having a bad day. And you just want to go in and not have people stare at you the way they do. But at the same time, I know it's helping. So it's a, definitely a catch 22, but sometimes you do just want to hide from it all, you know, for sure.
Do you ever think that that's the meaning of what you went through, that that's kind of the God voice?
Exactly. That is, you know, I realize that is the meaning, and that every opportunity, you know, whether I'm tired that day or not, I will take the opportunity to hopefully make a difference, whether it's a child that I get to wave at. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the best. Children will stare and look like they'd be scared, and especially the ones that look scared, once you wave and say hi to them, like, oh my God, and they wave back, and you can see them look at their parents like, he can talk? Like, and then now they're intrigued. It definitely, you see it change their whole facial expressions and body language.
Wow.
So it definitely is a blessing to be able to help people with some, you know, simple things to do. Like I say all the time, you know, Roosevelt said, do what you can with what you have where you're at, and that's definitely the motto I go by now wherever I go, whether it's professional life, personal life. If I can make a difference somehow for somebody, why not?
Well, along,
we gotta help each other.
Along those lines, Bobby, you're a star of stage, star of screen, star of TV. Do you think maybe it's time to bring back Mr. Bob the Heartthrob?
You really have done your research.
Yes, should we keep that an inside joke, Bobby? Is that, you know, it is a family show.
It's family. This is true. And I would still do that.
Okay.
I would still do that. You know, I've done a little bit of modeling, kind of let myself go the last couple of years, but I can get back in the gym. I think I can.
Bobby, tell us about Freedom Hard. Folks can learn more, visit freedomhard.com, HARD.com. What sort of led you down that Freedom Hard, that path with that company?
Freedom comes from the Army guy, me, and the hard part comes from hard-headed Marines, like my business partners, Freedom Hard. No.
Well.
It's myself and two other Marines. Freedom Hard is about being patriotic. It's about bringing patriotism back without having a 9/11. Like, every day we should be proud of our country and proud of where we're from and the freedoms we have. And we should enjoy that and live life to the fullest. That's what Freedom Hard's about. On a platform of human comedy, to be able to laugh, to be able to enjoy what we have, and be proud of that. And you don't even have to be. Freedom Hard is not just for here in the United States. It's for all over the world. Be proud of where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about.
Well spoken. Now, you've got a variety of products on there. The proceeds, I understand it, Bobby, of all your sales go to benefit a number of foundations. Not for nothing, Bobby, but, you know, it's not for me to tell you your business, but do you really think a guy like you should be selling cigars? Pitching
right?
Cigars on the Freedom Hard? I'm just asking.
Well, that's the deal. If you buy from me, you get free matches too. best weight loss program ever.
What? Tell us about the foundations that you're supporting through. If folks go to Freedom Hard and buy some of those cool products, where does some of their money go?
Yeah, some of the money all of us are big on veteran suicide prevention. Camp for Heroes is one of the big organizations. We try to help out as much as we can. They're building a camp for not only veterans, but first responders. And it's a fireman that started it, and it's a place to go where you can learn an outlet or just get away. We have skill classes. We can learn how to blacksmith, paint, write songs, record it, poetry. Even there might be some burn guy there teaching how to write comedy the way he learned. But all kinds of things like that. We lose ourselves when we get out, especially when you're wounded and you're forced out too early and you're not sure what to do. You need an outlet to deal with all the invisible wounds, the mental health. It helps to have some kind of hobby like woodworking or the gym or horse therapy or working with dogs and or painting and something to take your mind off everything. So
I'm watching your stand up there, Bobby. I'm guessing some of the jokes or the lines that you use on stage come out of real life experiences. One of my favorites, you're talking about you're invited to a wounded warrior, I think it was a bass fishing tournament or something, and you walked up to the, give us a little taste of Bobby Henlon on stage. Tell us that story.
Yes, you know, I'm lucky that I get to do what I do today with the stand-up comedy. God's given me strength and courage to laugh, and I get to travel around. I get to help veterans, all these different nonprofits. Like you were saying, I got invited to that bass fishing tournament to be able to go fishing with other veterans and do some comedy. Awesome. So, I went out there, and I showed up to the hotel. When I went to check in, the lady at the front desk said, "Are you with the Wounded Warriors?" And I'm like, "No, ma'am. This is a rare birth defect. Unfortunately for me, my mother had to work through her pregnancy in the circus as a fire eater. Now she thinks she has the right to complain to me about her acid reflux." And the funny thing is, that is one of the first jokes I wrote because I didn't want to tell people I was a veteran. But I said it differently. I didn't tell them I was going to the bass fishing tournament. I changed it to that this is just a rare birth defect. And then I shared the story about my mom working the circus. I had to make that up because I didn't want to tell them I was a veteran. I wanted to see if I could really just make them laugh.
Wow, that's interesting. Let's talk a little bit more about that after we come back. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're having a good time about a serious cause here with Bobby Henlon, known as the well-done comedian. Hopefully he'll be coming through Tucson sometime soon. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Bobby Henlon. Bobby's an Army veteran who's got several new careers. But mostly we're talking about his career as a stand-up comedian. He goes on stage under the nomiker. It's not my first language, Bobby. That's pretty good, huh? The nomiker.
Really good.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up after the show.
Oh, okay. The well-done comedian. Bobby, I was chuckling about your... And folks, look Bobby up, H-E-N-L-I-N-E, because so much of your comedy or your shtick, as I've had people call it, Bobby, is visual because of the extent of your wounds. As a kid growing up, we used to listen to record. You don't know what those are, but it was this piece of plastic. There was a need. It's not important. But we used to listen to Bill Cosby records, and so many of his acts they translated well to just the non-visual environment, if you will. Have you now? Don't. That's Cosby's probably not the best example I want to use right now, Bobby. But I mean,
no, he's an amazing writer, amazing comic. Without whatever the recent things problems we're having, but yes.
So, I mean, have you thought about doing? I mean, I guess walk us through when Bobby Henlon's got a show coming up, and you sit down and you put a pencil to paper. Is it? It's really dependent on, or you're counting on the fact that you're going to be on stage, that there's going to be that visual element?
Yes, definitely counting on the visual element for a lot of the material. And, when it comes to my self-deprecation stuff. And then, of course, there's just normal family things we got to laugh at. I have four children, two grandchildren. So there's the normal everyday life stuff, too, that you really don't have to be so much visual. But definitely when it comes to making fun of myself, you're going to have to see it to believe it.
Well, I'm enjoying it. I'm a big fan. And honestly, we need to talk offline sometime about getting you through Tucson. Do you have Tucson scheduled on your next tour with the other veterans?
No, we are just now starting all the planning of that with Mark Price and Joe Cash now, and that's what we're excited. I'm excited about it. So we're just in the beginning stages of getting it all together right now for sure. And we'll look at that. Definitely.
Well, Tucson listeners, those of you who are listening in Southern Arizona, either now or on the podcast, keep an eye out because BBG has an idea, and that's usually not a good thing. But in this case, Bobby, I'm going to talk to the Bravo 748 folks. We'll see if we can get that worked out. Bobby, we've got about 8 minutes or so left. I want to talk about some of your reflections. We discussed earlier in the show that your mission as a comedian is to show people that inside we're all the same. And having traveled the world a bit myself, that's one thing I've learned as I get older, is that in most cases, no matter where you go, folks just want to live their life, take care of their families, seek happiness wherever they can find it. You've mentioned that one of your favorite parts about your deployments was the humanitarian missions. And share with us just sort of some of your observations, Bobby, of the people in Iraq that we're there to help.
Yeah, they were generally all very happy we were actually there. They hear stuff, you don't always see that on the news. You know, you hear about the 1% that didn't want us there. But everybody else that really wanted us there just showed great gratitude. Going out there and helping rebuild the schools that were damaged and watching the kids play and laugh. I mean, that's the stuff exciting. That's the stuff we're going to see really make a difference. And it's going to take time. It's nothing that happens overnight. We'll see more results from that in the long term. When it comes to hearts and minds, it takes a long time to finally go through all that. I mean, it took Europe hundreds of years, and now it's a place we all want vacation, right? And so hopefully this continues on and does that.
Is that your observation now? And looking through the benefit of the lens of a retrospective, what is sort of your take on how things are? How do they stand over there now?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, Iraq and Afghanistan, of course, two different countries, really. One not really being established, and, Iraq being a well-established country with great people and many things going on for it. It could definitely be a better place, and it already is now, but it can continue. And as long as Iraqis continue to fight for themselves, I think it will be. And I think the younger generation knows what we've done for them, and that's where you're going to see it more as they grow up and take ownership.
Bobby, you've paid a very high price for your service and for taking an oath to defend our country and our Constitution. What words would you have for those young people now? Because, I mean, you re-enlisted after 9/11 happened. Young people now that are taking the oath, they mostly weren't born, or they were too young to remember that. What would be Bobby Henline's advice to them?
I would say definitely do it. I say join. I get asked that a lot from young men and women when I talk to high schools, or they're telling me they're already doing it. It's definitely something that I think everybody should do. I would love to have everybody, what a great world and better country it would be if everybody had to do 2 years. I know a lot of everybody agrees with that. They do 2 years, and then you get 2 years of college. We'd have people that really respect their country and educate it. And I think that's what we should all do, and we'd all appreciate it more.
Well, I tell you, I the reason I do this show, Bobby, I support those who serve because I never had to. I'm a little bit older than you, but when I first graduated from high school, it was the first year that President Carter brought back the draft, and I did my duty. I went down, I registered to vote, and I registered for the draft. And about a month later, the Iranians took over the embassy there in Tehran. I thought, oh, boy, here we go. I never had to do it. So I guess looking back, before I get ahead of myself here, now you got to see, I'm kind of starstruck having Bobby Henline on the show finally. I'm a little discombobulated. But you shared a story before we get too far away from the Iraq situation. You shared a story about a little Iraqi boy who literally saved your life. Tell our listeners about that.
So, back in 2003. We had a truck breakdown, and we were watching it while they went and got help. We were guarding it and started talking to the locals while we were there. And there was a little battle that went on there the night before in that area. So they were just telling us to watch out. There might be some enemies still in the area. Those were locals telling us this. So I had to use the bathroom, which when you're out there in war, you don't really have a bathroom, so you find a tree. And I went to go around behind the tree, and right before I stepped around the backside of the tree, the little boy said, "No, mister, boom, boom." And as I look down, there's bomblets that we dropped. We would drop bombs that blow up, so about 20 feet off the ground, and throw little mines all over the place. So I almost stepped on one of our own little bomblets, but actually two of them. The little boy saved my life that day.
Wow, that's a powerful, powerful story. Paying that forward, Bobby, you're very successful, and I think you've earned every bit of it. As you're paying that forward, what... You mentioned helping other veterans to suicide prevention. With that veteran suicide is a true scourge upon our nation. What are some of the other causes? I mean, is Bobby Handline the ideal guy to go in and visit children in a burn ward? Does that work? Does that not work?
Yes. Oh, my God, that works. I found out by visiting, and it helped me. I had other burn veterans come in and talk to me, going, okay, this is what it's going to be like. Hmm. This is what your skin's going to feel like and all this stuff. And so I go in now when I travel, like, as soon as I get an opportunity, I'm, whether it's a burn ward or just, another people that are injured with back injuries or whatever, orthopedic stuff, and I go into the hospitals and I visit them. Just to give them some kind of hope and let them know it's okay. And it's funny how people you meet actually are doing well. And, of course, they're using their sense of humor to laugh at it already.
Bobby, Ben gets a dumb question every show because, darn it, I pay for it. It's my show. Skin grafts, I don't understand. So they took skin from other parts of your body and put it on different parts of your body.
They'll take good skin that wasn't burnt and they move it around. Like a cheese grater type thing. They'll take off a piece of skin and top layer and spread it out and stick it over the burnt skin, like essentially make a skin quilt out of you.
And where the skin came from, does that regrow? I mean, I know we can apparently grow ears on the backs of mice, but does your body then regrow that skin where it was taken from? Or
yeah, it's like a sore where it just kind of heals up with scabs and heals up. They'll do a partial thickness graft where they just take one layer, or they do a full thickness graft. Like, for instance, save my head. They actually did a tummy tuck and took full thickness graft from my stomach and put it on top of my head.
Any weird reactions to that?
Oh, I got belly hair going on top of my head. I got to pick a lint out of my ears.
Bobby Handline, what a joy to have you on American Warrior Radio. We've got about 30 seconds. What have you got coming up in your life? Where can folks look for you?
All kinds of stuff, of course. Bobby Handline, any social media. Amanda to the Rescue is a new Animal Planet show where you'll see me and my favorite dog, Daisy, coming up pretty soon on the episode. And you will see us in Man's Best Friend next spring, where I play Marine.
Wonderful, wonderful. Bobby, thank you so much for spending your time with us. Folks, visit freedomhard.com, bravo748.com. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to the podcast edition of American Warrior Radio with Ben Bueller Garcia, presented by Medicare Mentors. American Warrior Radio, telling the stories of the American men and women who protect us at home and abroad. American Warrior Radio airs Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KRDO News Radio 105.5 FM, 1240 a.m. and 92.5 FM, and is available by podcast at KRDO.com. Select the radio tab and click on podcasts.